Hello, everyone. I would like to talk a little bit about classical probability theory and about the notion of conditional independence that goes back to the 70s. And my main goal is I want to generalize the notion of conditional independence, which is a phrase for random variables, to also to incorporate something which is relative to some input. And I want to do this in some measure theoretic generality. Want to have no restriction on the kind of distributions I have. And I want this to work in causality and probability models as well, and also like express certain statistical theory. I will go through this, and I want to motivate it a little bit. So first of all, why do we insist on measure theory to do probability theory? That's the usual mathematical framework that goes back to Kolmogorov. The main point is that if you're not restricting your sets in your space, then you cannot assign volume or probabilities to all the sets you have in your subsets you have in your set. So you have to restrict to some subsets. So you have to make it kind of safe. Also, you can avoid set theoretic paradoxa like Banach-Tarski, which is here depicted for hyperbolic plane. Secondly, if you, for instance, want to have a uniform distribution on the diagonal of such a square, then such a uniform distribution doesn't have a mass function and doesn't have a density with respect to the dimensional Lebesgue measure. That means like everyone who learns probability theory, like that's when it's machine learning with mass function or densities, they cannot properly describe such distribution. And I would like to include them, as well as if you have delta peaks, then you cannot depict them with densities. So this is all. So the main takeaway here is I want to measure theory because it's safe, it avoids paradox, and it's still expressive enough to do all the things we want to do. Then let's recall what independent random variables are. If I have random variables living on some sample space, probability space here, X and Y, then we say they're independent if their distribution factorizes. And this just means that the outcome of Y does not provide any information about the outcome of X. So this is basically the main thing we want to model in. And then we can also do this conditionally. If you have a third variable you condition on, then we say we have conditional independence of X and Y condition on Z if the joint distribution factorizes like this. And this means that Y does not contain any additional information beyond the information already encoded in Z to predict the state of X. So that means it's all about the things that are not yet in Z. So, and these conditional independence relations, as everyone know, most people might know in this workshop here, is that they satisfy certain rules. For instance, if you have deterministic relations, that's depicted like this, and then you have independence respect to all variables, conditional independence respect to all other variables. You have symmetry, which is a bit surprising, but it holds. You have decomposition rules that you can ignore. If you have two variables here, you can ignore them. Or two components, you can always ignore them. Or you can put them on the conditioning side. And also you can, if you have both of them, you can go back to this joint distribution, this kind of chain rule-like rules you have. And now I want to go back to the 70s. We have like these two papers about conditional independence from Philip David. And already in these starting papers, he talks about conditional independence of random variables. But he, in the same breath, in the same part, he already talks about this relationship to statistical theory. That, for instance, if you have a statistical model where theta here are the parameters, then you can say something, the distribution of X is not dependent on the parameters when I condition on another statistic T, for instance. Or if I have a statistic T, then the distribution of T does not depend on the parameters. And this is, of course, different than random variables because these parameters are not stochastic and you still can reason about it in words, like in words that we have some form of independence, which is different from that. And we want to basically generalize it. And unfortunately, that or like since then, this conditional independence was studied very much. But like these deterministic and functional relationships that one actually wants to include, they were not properly provided in the theory, or one had to make workarounds by considering them random variables and in the Bayesian setting. So they were like here all of poor probabilistic nature. Yeah, for instance, an ancillary statistic. If you have here a statistical model and you have statistic function of X, then we can look at the distribution of X under this model. Then you have the parameters, and you said ancillary if it is always the same distribution, no matter what kind of parameters I use. And I would like to phrase this as this kind of independence without conditioning here. This is basically the goal. And the problem, of course, is just to go back here, we say, the distribution of X, as if you take this as a definition here, then we say the distribution of X, the distribution of R is not dependent on theta. If I would swap this around here, and I would just like use the same sentence by just flipping them around, then I would say the distribution of theta, this is this kind of distribution, would not be dependent on R. The problem is here that this distribution, this conditional distribution, we don't even have because there's no distribution on theta. That means we cannot talk about the conditional we can impose conditions on. So already this here is inherently asymmetric relationship. So one can be stated, the other one, for instance, not, or has some different meaning. And the theta here is non-random. So we want to really include these non-random variables, and we want to have we want to be able to express this asymmetry between parameters and random variables. Then we can also talk about sufficient statistics, that's very similar. Now it's just in conditional version. We say a statistic is sufficient. If I condition on this, then our original variable is not dependent on the parameters. And I want to phrase this in such a conditional independence, which is not yet defined in some sense. Another motivating example is, consider we have a probabilistic program where these boxes are my input to my program. It's really like, consider it's written in code. And I have this output variable, which basically takes some other state, takes the input and calculates something, or just some addition or something. And I can just easily reason, if I see this computational graph, that this node here, this variable, is functionally not dependent on this input here. It's just dependent on this. If I have this given, then this is independent of this. So these functional independence, I want to state as such a conditional independence. This output, or I call it O2 now, is independent of this input given that input. So I want to include these functional dependency in probabilistic programs as such a conditional independent statement. And in most generality, these kind of probabilistic programs are also called like causal Bayesian networks, where I have these conditional directed acyclic graph, which has two different kind of nodes and edges, such as I know cycles. And now I assign in most generality to each of these nodes a measurable space. Can argue later is for these output nodes, at least I need standard measurable spaces. These are kind of like real numbers, the Euclidean space or manifolds. So the well-behaved spaces. And for each of the nodes, I also provide transition probability, which also called Markov kernel, which we just write as if it were a conditional distribution, but it's a transition probability. You give an input and it tells you with what probability you get what kind of output. And for each node you have them. And then you can have the joint distribution, as you know, by just taking the product of these Markov kernels in reverse order as they come here, so that the dependency is taken care of properly. One motivation is I want to, for these kind of input-output systems, so these kind of Bayesian networks with input variables, I want to state global and local Markov property. And I want to just look here shortly at this local Markov property. We take this factorization, I take the last factor out, and then I see that this is a marginal. And what I get is that the joint is some kind of Markov kernel here times the marginal. And this factorization already tells us how we need to define later, if you want to rephrase this kind of factorization as this conditional independence, where this last node is independent of all other nodes conditioned on these parents. And one thing you already should, I should mention here is, and note that these both sides are dependent on all the input, while this Markov kernel is only dependent on the parents. So often people might think you want to take the whole input here as well, but here this Markov kernel is not. This will play a role later if you want to define this properly. So now we want to generalize this, I want to motivate this in one or two ways how to do this, and then we'll see what was proposed and what are the issues with these definitions. So the naive definition would just be, okay, if I have a family of distributions and I want to say X is independent of Z, then I can just say, okay, if it's a family of distribution, then I want just that X is independent of Y given Z for each input, for each basically model parameter. So that would be the naive way to do this by saying, okay, if it's independent, should I just hold for all of them individually? The problem is with this, if you plug in T for these parameters, then for this distribution, this T itself is constant. That means like every variable would be independent. So it means everything would be ancillary, which is of course not meaningful. So this kind of definition cannot express ancillarity. Also, if you want to talk about these different inputs, one output is not dependent on the input, because we are looking at T individually at all times for all the inputs. That means we cannot reason about these kind of differences because we're implicitly always conditioning on the whole input. So you cannot actually see the dependence between output and inputs. So this notion is already out, even though it's the most proposed, often proposed, this is out. So this definition does not work. Then 2017, extended conditional independence was proposed and published in the Annals of Statistics, also by Philip David and a former PhD student of his. And what they proposed is looking at the family of distributions and on the index set, and then proposing having several variables that either live on this basically space with stochasticity stack space. So these are kind of random variables in this old sense, and variables that kind of transform the index in some form. And they impose that if they have these RNS, that they're injective, so in the sense of they can recover all the information in the index. And then they group them together to have basically consider them as two-part variables that has either some stochasticity and some deterministic part in there. And then you want to say X is independent of this tuple given the other tuple. And now like a very long technical definition comes. If for every S that lives in the image of this variable here, and all bounded measurable maps that live on Z space here, there exists a measurable map that goes from Z to R, such that for every T in the fiber of S, we have this conditional expectation value is just a function of Z, almost surely. So this is the definition, and this comes with several issues. First, the variable R is kind of meaningless here. R doesn't occur anywhere here in the definition. It just occurs here to make this injective. But already the identity is already makes every complements every S to make it injective. So that means like it's also not a condition on S by requiring this R here. So I can always take this and it always holds. Then of course not very satisfying that you have to make the difference here between stochastic and non-stochastic variables. The main point was we want to have a provide univariant framework. The definition is very difficult to understand, to parse. And also that we want to have these separate rules, which we started with conditional independence, so we can reason, for instance, or have good properties for graphical models. And they're actually not enough to get, for instance, to use user proof to get global Markov properties for causal Bayesian networks with input variables. So now let's think about how to fix this definition, and that will lead to the final definition. First, this R, as we said, we can replace always by this identity on this on the index space T. But from the point on we replace this R, we can always replace by T. Then in every statement it will just occur. So it means like we can also just leave it out and leave it implicit. We don't actually need to mention it. So that means like we can just remove it from the notation and use the same definition and just stating it this, and it would be equivalent to what was done before. Furthermore, in family of distribution, you can also just rephrase as a Markov kernel, where this is just the input output. So that we can also express this equivalently like this. Finally, we want to basically unify this X, Y, and Z to not live just on W or T, but on the whole space. They allow to depend on the parameters and some stochasticity to get an X, same for Y. And if we kind of combine Z and S into Z itself, then it's also such of this form. And then we can properly define it like this. That's basically the goal here. The question is what to do with the definition. And if we want to go through this technical definition, then just to look at the internal logic of quantifiers for all S, for all H, there exists a G, such that for all T, this equation holds. And this H here, these are kind of the bounded measurable functions. The role is just indicator function. It's slightly more general than indicator functions. So I can just plug in here as indicator functions and just these measurable sets. And I plug this in and I get this form here now. Now I can do two things. If I do an indicator function, then I see, okay, this is actually a probability. The expectation value of this indicator function is actually the probability here. And if I have for all that exist, usually you cannot swap these quanters, but if you not consider this an element, but you consider it as a function of the previous four, you can put this existential quanta in front, and then you can reformulate it, as there exists a function that takes measurable sets, input, go to R, such that for all these, this holds. And now you are basically, it's clear what the structure is. The structure is, this here is basically the conditional distribution of X, condition of Y, Z, and T, if you consider this Markov kernel, should be a Markov kernel, actually. This here is just a function, should be a Markov kernel in X, condition only in S and Z. And if you want to join this into one variable, it becomes very clear what we now want to do. Now we, in addition, now impose that this D should be a Markov kernel, so a transition probability. It should satisfy probability rules. So this is now how it fixed, and this is the definition I'll give. And I call this now transitional conditional independence. So I consider measurable spaces, W and T, transition probability underlying space from T to W. And now I consider my variables to live on this joint space going to X, Y, and Z. And what I also allow is I could also allow that they're already stochastic in itself. So they could also not just be measurable maps, they could also be transition properties themselves. And then I say that X is independent of Y condition on that with respect to this Markov kernel, if there exists a transition probability that only depends on Z going to X such that this factorization holds. And here you see the whole structure. Here you see that conditional independence is directly related to factorization property of my underlying distributions and Markov kernels. And what is interesting here is this Z does not depend on T here. This is necessary and required. That might strike people off, but if I put again T here, then we have this problem that you cannot express ancillarity and it would be equivalent to what the naive definition would be in some sense. So the non-dependence on this, on T is required. But if you want to have something that's dependent here on T, then you can just replace your Z because it's allowed to depend on T, to just take all the parts on T as part of your definition of Z. So Z could be also, could be new variable Z comma T or S comma T, and then you have the dependency here, but you have to explicitly state this. So it's not like automatically taken care of. And this is now how we properly define conditional independence. And now I wanna go to some properties. First, recall that we can do all these things with Markov kernels. We can do products. We can do marginalization, can do push forwards, compositions. Conditioning is difficult in this general setting. The conditioning is actually difficult to properly mathematically do. But if you use standard measurable spaces, then even in this relative setting where you have inputs, you can define conditional probability distributions or conditional Markov kernels. With respect to this joint one, where this here is a marginal, and this is unique. You can show it's unique up to some node sets respect to the marginal. The remark now is this new definition. It's stronger than this one that was proposed because we ask actually additional properties for this function, existence of these functions. So this implies this in their setting, but we don't actually need to have this RNS anymore. But if you use their requirements, then this is stronger. Secondly, if you say there is no input, this is constant, then we recover the usual definition. So we're going back to the definition for random variables, and this is equivalent in the setting. So this was then ancillarity, ancillary statistics. Now this you can state statistic R is ancillary if and only if this conditional independence holds as I defined it. And this just means, in other words, it's a probability distribution such as the distribution of R is a distribution here given by Q. And this is just formally to say this distribution does not depend on the parameters. And this is exactly what we wanted. So that really captures the notion we wanted. But we don't stop there. Also, sufficient statistic now equivalently can be described with this conditional independence as I defined this. And this just means there exists a factorization like this, where this Markov kernel is part of this existence statement. And as you can see, this is automatically now a conditional distribution of X given S and theta, but it's not dependent on theta. So this is such a conditional distribution, not dependent on theta. So we equivalently can define this. And I called it general Fisher name interpretation theorem, but it's almost just a definition. But you can also look that this factorization property for sufficiency still holds. Then there are all other classical theorems about a combination of ancillary and sufficient statistics. And you can now replace them with conditional independence statements. And this gives you now additional rules that hold for conditional independencies in this setting. Then you can also talk about a general version of propensity score, which is often used in causal inference, even with respect to transition probabilities, where there's no distribution over Z is provided. So then you plug for Z in, this is now the whole distribution, and that was usually started in the binary case, which is just basically one value, but here it's basically in a high dimensional space. And if you have another map that is dependent on Z, then you can state you have this equivalence between the conditional independence as we defined it in this very general setting, if and only if E is a function of this S. And in particular, this E renders X independent of Z. So you can always, if you have a Markov kernel, you know exactly which variable you have to choose to make them independent. And it's you can show because of this equivalence that it's the smallest such statistic that carries the least information such that it can render them independent. Then we can talk about if you have statistical models, we can also say something about likelihood and posterior inference. I don't want to go much into this, but it's fun that this asymmetry in this conditional independence statement captures these small differences from likelihood-based inference and Bayesian posterior-based inference. So X is independent of the parameters conditioned on the likelihood, but its parameters are independent of X conditioned on the posterior. So I don't want to, there's not much more to say, but I like that the asymmetry captures these kind of different approaches and their meaning. Then, we have rules. We have the rules I promised for this conditional independence in this framework. And now we have again this Markov kernel. Then we have two specific random variables, or how we want to call them. They go from this space to T, which is just a projection on T on the input, and the constant map. They play a role. Otherwise, we have X, Y, Z, and U, which are also allowed here to have their own stochastic independent noise as well. And for simplicity, I assume that these spaces are all standard. Then we get these following rules. First, we have these special rules, which are related to deterministic relationships. It's a deterministic, they're automatically independent from everything else. Then we have to stay, we have this only on the left side, unfortunately. For the right side, we state only that if I condition on the whole input, then X is independent of the input, basically, always. Second, A third, it's interesting that this implicit dependency on T is still captured. That means if I have this conditional independence, I still get the independence of this T automatically in the second spot. Then we have the usual rules of decomposition and weak union, but we now have to state them because we don't have the general symmetry. We have to state them between left and right version, left weak union and right weak union. And they hold basically the same as before, just that we have to state them separately. Then we have four contraction rules, and this is because we have to combine two rules, and then you have two here on the left, so it's the same, but we have now two versions to put U in the first spot, Y in the second, Y in the first, U in the second, X in the first, U in the second, U in the first, X in the second, and you get four contraction rules now. And then I can also say when we actually have symmetry. Symmetry we have, for instance, if you condition on the whole input, then we get this normal symmetry. So that means like the asymmetry is in some sense broken from the point on the whole input is conditioned on. Or a bit weaker assumption is if Y is just not independent, Y is not dependent on the input given Z, then I can also swap X and Y around. And then I have to promise it's a very strong notion of conditional independence. And I want to show that it's not too strong And to make this, I proved the global Markov property in this setting, which basically reads the same as before. If you have a causal Bayesian network, but now with input nodes, then if they're D-separated or M-separated or sigma-separated, all these generalizations also work, then the corresponding variables are independent from each other in this new definition, this very strong definition of conditional independence. And here you would get, for instance, if I conditioned on this input, then this variable, this output variable is separated from this. And so I get the required, like the wanted independence as stated before. And there's a small notion here to make this look the same. I also have to make this D-separation a bit different by putting all the input nodes on this second part as well, implicitly, to match these so that they read the same. So, and this is the, and I think the most general stated Markov property for all basically measurable spaces or standard measurable spaces with input variables. And it's the strongest version of conditional independence as was proposed as far as I know. Then remark for causality, now that we have a global Markov property, we can also prove do calculus rules, adjustment criteria, chance ID algorithms, and so on. They can also now be stated with this. And we have worked this out. And now we have this in this whole measure theoretic generality. And we have to be careful by these adjustments rules is conditional Markov kernels are only defined up to null sets. And if you want to have this ambiguity gone, then you have to assume certain absolute continuities or positivities. But this often is a bit swept under the rug, but people usually know about these kind of things. Maybe testing, I'm not talking too much about this. I want to say how general this definition is. Tobias Fritz and Andreas Klingler last year, they showed that you can just use the definition, which is structural, I gave, and directly generalizes to Markov categories, which is basically just an abstraction of a category of spaces with transition probabilities as morphisms. And then this factorization property was directly used to prove deseparation criterion for string diagrams as well. So this has really structural meaning, and it can easily be generalized. And I don't know if, for instance, quantum probabilities, I'm not an expert there, if one can phrase things also in terms of Markov categories, then one could also state such conditional independence there. So in conclusion, so we have a very simple definition with structural meaning, which is just one line. It can be phrased in measure theoretic generality. You can now combine discrete and continuous distribution. It's really all fine to use them in these Markov kernels. We have a unique binding framework to reason about input, output, and conditional random variables. We can even generalize it to categorical probability theory. We have all these rules we want, a relation, or left and right version, plus some extra rules. Then the definition is strong. It implies all the previous definition of conditional independence that was proposed. So it's the strongest that was proposed, as far as I know. But it's not too strong. We still get global Markov property for these graphical models out, which then implies easily do calculus rules, adjustment criteria, and ID algorithm as people have studied them before. And we can express what we started from, the statistical notions of ancillarity, sufficiency, adequacy, and propensity score equivalently as a transitional conditional independence. Okay, thank you very much for your attention.
Questions? Yes, go ahead.
Well, thank you. This is a very much, if you like, making the full program that Philip was anticipating in his 1979 paper in Journal of Statistical Society. Now, I've been talking from time to time with both Milan Studeni and Philip about this asymmetric version. But the question is, there are other asymmetric versions that could be of interest to handle than the ones that you've been talking about. For example, the martingale property. I mean, if the expectation of X, so this is simple, expectation of X given Y and Z is independent of Z. That is like a martingale property, that's what you use. And the point is, this is very non-symmetric. The fact that the price tomorrow the price of the stocks is only depending on the price today and not on previous times is one thing, but you cannot reverse it because the opposite one simply doesn't exist. The question is whether your framework will cover that, or whether you can prove these separation-like theorems for martingale structures on DAX.
So I personally think, like, if you use a time series and you can represent them as a graphical model, they can use the same reasoning as I've described. But of course, the notion of condition independence based on martingale is a bit different, because if you're only looking at expectation values or conditional expectation values, then you basically linearize this theory in some sense. So in some sense, you would get some linear version of this, but you could use this as a template, what I suggested, to do this linearly as well. So I think it would not basically be equivalent, but you would get a theory out that is of meaning.
But there is this thing that it very, I mean, in the theory you describe, in principle, the trick and possibly one of the reasons that it has not been made before is that you can pretend these non-probabilistic things to be probabilistic, and then you get essentially the same theory back. Whereas if you do martingales, it's really different because it's really non-symmetric. That X is conditionally independent of Y given Z does not imply that Y is conditionally independent of, you know, you cannot switch the X and Y. It simply is not because, not just because they have different status, but simply because it isn't true. So I think it's a bit worse there. And I just wonder how much would cover with your one.
So I would just say they're not equivalent. In these time series, often people take also this time variable into account to say they're only conditioning on the past and so on. So for this, you have to adjust this a bit. But like the definition I give is basically a general notion. But if you want to have time series, I think you can rephrase a lot of things. But if you're only interested in linear dependencies, then you have to adjust this. But I think as a template, it might work well to play with this around. But I have not studied this.
I think, no, it's not just a question of linear dependence. It's a question of regression one way. It's simply not the regression. It's not, you cannot invert the regressions in the same way. So it's a bit more, it's a bit more, anyway, it's, if you get martingales into that framework, it'd be great.
It sounds interesting to study, but I have not yet looked into this. Yeah, thank you for the question.
I have an extremely imaginary question. Sorry, maybe you've answered that, but I had trouble following for the, you know, later part of the talk. So in the very beginning, you said you can just cheat and do kind of like a Bayesian trick and model these parameters as random variables. Mm-hmm. Why should I not just do that? So what, you know, what is actually, what's the demerit of that hack?
The problem with this hack is from the point on you choose a distribution, you're basically also choosing the support of this distribution. And that means that outside of the support, you lose all information. And especially when you have a continuous distributions, you're always allowed with densities, you're always allowed to change things on just on points as you like. But if you, for instance, want to do causality, you don't want that things suddenly jump at points where you make, let's, for instance, take a conditional distribution that kind of changes there, while interventional distributions have clear behavior. So I find it unsatisfying having a theory that relies on these probabilistic notions. We are allowed to change things on null sets, which basically means outside of the support, which have meaning like in the positive and the negative sense and for interventions, for instance.
Yeah, that makes sense. But it could also explain why, for example, in the quantum people working on this weren't really bothered. So it did bother me always that people are ambiguous for these choices, whether these are now random variables or parameters or not, and we use probabilistic notations, but we don't treat them probabilistically. But in the end, they are always treated to be finite. So you could just slap a uniform distribution on them, and probably you will not run into major trouble. But you're saying as soon as you go continuous, things, you know, this might blow up. So this will A, explain why you do it, and B, explain why quantum people aren't too bothered in practice.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. I think there are people raise their hand in the chat.
Oh, sorry, Sam.
I think Thomas Richards has his hand up for something.
Go ahead, Thomas.
Yeah, so just one question here. So you said you have left redundancy, but not right redundancy, I think. And so I just wanted to understand, is that also a feature in the Constantino and David theory, or do they have, is their theory symmetric in that regard?
I think it's not really symmetric, but you only, so there is this version, one of these contraction rules that kind of swaps these arguments around. One is kind of flipped. So it means like if you use left redundancy plus this rule, you often get the same result on the right-hand side as well, but with slight nuances. So in this way, you actually get functional dependencies on the right-hand side as well with some nuances. So here in the theory, these combinations give you this. In their theory, I also don't think they can do this. Like in the most generality, I think they can't.
I mean, just because they're sort of having to multiply the number of inference rules for conditional independence, this seems like your criticism of David's theory was you said that it was for this extended conditional independence was you thought it was complicated, but then it seems like if your approach is simpler, it's then leading to this multiplication of the number of rules for inferring conditional independence relations. So it seems like there's some trade-off there. Is that correct?
So the extended conditional independence already asymmetric as well. The reason they don't state more asymmetric rules is that they couldn't prove them. They're not valid in their theory. So it means like that I have more rules. It's a feature. It's not a bug.
Okay.
And of course, like you have to memorize them, but like it's left and right and contraction rules, and then one or two more. So I don't think that's such a problem.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's just a quick question. You make some mentions about measurable spaces in several slides, but you seem to be using this only like qualitatively, like you only need for a measure to be well-defined. So I'm wondering if your approach would work if I would give you a measure well-defined in a Polish space, for instance, and then you try to use your arguments for defining conditional independences in such larger, not larger, but more complex structural spaces.
So I said like I do measurable space in general, so you can state it. There are like one or two or three rules that need standard measurable spaces. That means standard Borel spaces, some people call them standard Borel spaces, and they're actually basically the Borel structure of Polish spaces, as you said. So when I said standard, this usually means an underlying Polish space. That's what it means.
Oh, okay.
And this is needed because to do conditioning, that means like what I call disintegration of Markov kernels, there actually you need these stronger assumptions because otherwise you cannot decompose. You don't have this chain rule kind of thing. You really need standard measurable spaces there. And that shows up, for instance, in the rule of a left weak union. There you need disintegration. But the whole power of the theory actually comes when you do categorical probability theory, like Tobias Fritz is doing, because there you really only have, basically you have abstract spaces, abstract transition probabilities, and then you can still reason with these conditional independencies.
Okay. So thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. Yes,
it's really the existence of conditional probabilities, regular conditional probabilities, or that is a question. So instead of saying standard Borel, you could just assume that the conditional probabilities kernels were well defined. If they were well defined, they will satisfy these things. And it's sort of this thing. I mean, if you have a specific case, they might exist anyway. And you don't. It's not the standard Borel assumption that is the necessary one. The standard Borel makes you certain that the conditional probabilities exist.
Yes. So if you have conditional distribution,
yeah.
So if you can do conditioning without this assumption, then a lot of these arguments go through.
I'm sure you can do on some Hilbert space probability models where you have Gaussian distributions of Hilbert space. That's fine, even if they're not standard for it. I'm sure, for example.
Yeah. Thank you for the comment. That was exactly my line of thinking. Like there are some people searching for probability distributions in more complex spaces where they don't have such topological properties, and you cannot define a Kolmogorov axioms quite clearly. Well, and then perhaps this might give some light into what things that actually work for those cases, right?
Every time where I said like I need standard spaces, that's actually to make sure I can do disintegration, I can do conditioning. So if you have other ways to do this in specific spaces, or you have certain probabilities that automatic sum of this, then like all the arguments would go through.
So we're running quite a bit over time now. So Richard, can I ask you to ask your question during the virtual coffee break?
Sure.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay, thank you very much.
Let's thank Patrick again. And Patrick, maybe if you could stay online just to field other questions on the Zoom link. Okay, let's thank Patrick again. Yeah,
thank you very much.
And for those of us who are in person, now is the conference photo, and then we'll head downstairs for a coffee break. And I think it makes sense, given the time, to meet back here, and we'll start our breakout session at 11:30. So we'll have an hour-long breakout session. Mm-hmm.